Welcome to the Zen Founder Podcast. I'm Rob, the founder.
And I'm Sherry, the clinical psychologist. And we've come together to help founders and their families stay sane while starting up.
Each week, we'll talk about different ways to work well, stay emotionally and physically healthy, and stay connected to the people that you care about.
Hey, so how's it going today?
It's been kind of a stressful day. Been kind of a stressful week, to be honest. Most of our developers have been working on improving database queries, optimizing hardware, adding infrastructure. It's stuff that really isn't like the core part of our app. It isn't driving features forward, but it's stuff that has to happen. We're on that we haven't had any outages, but I can tell that if we didn't do anything, we'd be having an outage here in a week or two. And so we're right on the cusp of having to optimize things to get to that next level.
Do you mean that you are using more Legos to reinforce your basic structure in your Lego house?
That's exactly what I'm doing. That's a great way to translate it.
Because I don't really know what you mean.
Did I use a lot of words that didn't make any
Something
sense?
Something about infrastructure, context. And then I just started thinking about Legos.
Let's just say we're adding more servers and we're making the database run faster and things like that. And it's really time intensive and it doesn't actually push the app forward from a customer's perspective, but it's something that has to get done, you know, as we've ramped up and had more and more customers. And so it's interesting that it's stressful to do this because we're on the cusp of things falling apart within weeks or months of some bad event happening and we're heading it off at the pass. But at the same time, it's fun. Right? It's almost a game because we're pushing to beat a deadline. And once we achieve this goal, it's kind of like we've won the game for now.
Like you're in a competition.
Exactly. We're in a competition with some outside mystical force that's trying to make the app slow or trying to make the web server crash. About every 3 months, we have to do some type of optimizations like this. And every time we do it, we're in the midst of chaos and it feels stressful. But once we get through it, it's like beating that next level of a video game or winning that card game with your friends. It's a sense of victory, a sense of, I think there's probably some endorphin rush that comes along with it too.
It also sounds like the plot of any Bruce Willis movie.
Indeed. Indeed.
Except and his, it's the end of the world they're trying to outrun.
Right. And ours, it's just the end of a web server or something much less important. So last week, you went to a conference, talked about a neuroscience and play. And I think that might tie into this idea that we're kind of playing this game and charging towards a goal. You want to tell us a little bit about that conference, and then we can look at how that relates to being a founder and running a startup?
Yeah, for sure. So last weekend, I went to the annual meeting of the Interpersonal Neurobiology Conference, which is hosted every year at UCLA. And this year, they focused the content of the conference around issues related to play, creativity, and mindfulness. So there were a lot of really interesting presenters, including Stuart Brown, who's the director of the National Institute of Play, which is a job I could totally get behind. Steve Gross, who works for Life is Good, which is way more than a t-shirt company. They do a lot to sort of foster play and fun as a way of healing in high violence neighborhoods and things like that. And then the Flow guy, whose name is, I can't pronounce, but he is the one who originated the theory about flow. And then Dan Siegel was there, who's probably one of the leading researchers in sort of translating neuroscience information into the daily applications of that. But anyway, the focus on play this time was looking at what's happening in the brain when people are playing and understanding play not only as something that kids do, really important for kids to do, but also something that is an important part of life all across the developmental lifespan so that adults still need to play.
So what is play? Like, how would you define it?
There were lots of definitions that were thrown around at the conference. You know how academicians are with their fancy definitions, but I think the definition that I liked most was from Steve Gross from Life is Good, and he said that playfulness is the motivation to freely and joyfully engage with, connect with, and explore the surrounding world. So I like it because it reflects the internal motivation, right? Play is something that happens inside of you. There's the sense of freedom and choice, and there's the emotion of joy. It's fun. Even though it can be intense, there's a sense of lightness. And that it's also interactive. You're connecting or exploring or engaging with the world around you, potentially people around you, in a specific way.
Okay. So I have to admit, The definition sounds cool, but it feels a little touchy-feely. Like, I'm wondering why we should care about this as humans or as founders. Like, what is the importance of this in our day-to-day lives? And I guess long-term, why should the listeners listening to this who's starting their company or maybe a spouse of someone who's starting their company care about this topic?
Yeah, I guess freely and joyfully may not be words that really resonate with your experience of reworking the infrastructure of your server. But what happens in play neurologically is incredibly important. If you think of your mind, it's something that's a very complicated tool. The brain is the organ, the mind is sort of the function of the organ. Your brain is always taking in all this information, taking in emotion, it has memory. It's an incredible multi-processor. And play is an activity that helps to integrate the mind, basically. You're integrating internal experiences and external information from the world around you. And the thing about play that's different from other activities is the lightness, the lack of anxiety, allows your mind to integrate in a more free way. So if you think about a healthy mind, really a mind that's functioning well, is a mind that's able to integrate internal and external information in a pretty predictable, accurate, quick way. A mind that is not functioning well is a mind that's not integrating information very well. It's hyper-focused on anxiety triggers. It's hyper-focused on external information as opposed to internal information. Is that making sense? Like, it's compartmentalizing information too much. A healthy mind is integrating internal and external information and providing appropriate sort of guidance for how the body should interact with the world.
Okay, so I'm imagining, you know, a founder who is anxious about something, whether it's their server going down or not having enough money coming in, not making payroll, and they're stuck in their own head and they spend a week going into work and coming home and just thinking about it and perseverating on it. And it's just an infinite loop going on in their head. And that's where you're saying they're not allowing any external factors to come in, right? They're too internalized at that point. And then on the flip side, it might be if you go to work and you're maybe just doing the mindless tasks and you're going and just checking email and dealing with everything that comes up externally, but you're not doing any type of internal thinking of higher level thinking, where should we go this week and next week and next month and next year, and doing that visioning that needs to be almost an internal process, and it's the responsibility of the founder. Is that kind of two maybe examples of too much of internal thought and too much external?
Yeah. And I think about you right now as you're working on this server problem, you could be hyper-focused on, oh my gosh, if I don't fix this, my app is going to crash and burn and I'm going to lose all my customers and all this work, I'm going to totally fail.
And that would be an over-internalized thing, right? Of like focusing on the anxiety of it.
You're just focused on one thought.
Yeah.
But you know that you have a team that you trust, that you like. You're all working together. You also know that you have been through this kind of thing before. So your mind is recalling those memories and how you coped with them in the past. Your mind is also giving you some satisfaction as you sit down and look at the problem and sort of like work out potential solutions. You get a little endorphin, like, ooh, solve that one. Ooh, solve that one. Got that. My team is on this. So there's lots of things going on in addition to the stress. There's these little tiny successes. There's past memory. So your mind is doing lots of things at once. That's an integrated mind. You're integrating lots of pieces of information.
Got it. So you can really see the danger of not being able to integrate that information and just letting one of those tracks run away with you. Any one of those tracks you mentioned would be dangerous if you just focused on that, because it would kind of paralyze you and not allow you to get stuff done.
And the play kind of parallel of that is children are sort of the experts at play. We can all play, but they do it best. When you think about our boys working on a Lego problem, trying to build something that's not exactly working out, they're doing the same things that you're doing about your server. They're remembering how they've built things in the past. They're trying different things. They might seek help. They might try different blocks. There's a lot of problem solving that's going on. And it's really intense, focused work, but it's also joyful and fun when they are engaged in it. So play is the practice field for that kind of brain integration. And it needs to happen in these lower anxiety states when the mind is pretty relaxed. So when people are playing, there's this incredible capacity for high-level reasoning, insightful problem-solving, and all sort of creativity that we can't do when we're under the gun, so to speak.
Got it. So you have to do it when you're more relaxed. And as we've said, the benefit of it is that it integrates your mind, and then integrating your mind allows you to be a better problem solver, to get more stuff done in your personal and professional life, and kind of just to have a healthy mind, in essence.
Yeah. One of the presenters at the conference says nothing lights up the brain, like in a functional MRI, nothing lights up the brain like play, especially playing with a three-dimensional object like Legos or any kind of thing that you're holding in your hand. Your cerebellum, which is the back of your brain, the brainstem that regulates balance and movement in the world, and then the very front of your brain that works on planning, executive functioning, abstract thinking, like your whole brain is working together in this really like cool integrated way that we don't see with a lot of other states of behavior. Dan Siegel, who is another one of the presenters, said that play is as basic and as pervasive a natural phenomenon as sleep, which basically means you can't really live too well without play.
Okay. And I think we're going to get into it a little later of how to play, like some practical ways that we can do that, starting a company, how you can do it at work or away from work. Before we dive into kind of the practical side of it, let's say that someone is deprived of play for a long period of time, right? We've looked at kind of a short term of how maybe your mind would go down certain tracks and it would make you less effective. But what if you were deprived of play for years? What are the consequences of something like that?
It's interesting because a lot of the academic research in play has originated out of work looking at the developmental process of mass murderers, ironically. So this interest in play, I think, was probably spearheaded largely in the United States by Stuart Brown, and he made his work as a psychiatrist, he kind of made his mark looking at the developmental trajectory of people who are mass murderers. So he looked back at their early life experiences and noticed that in many, many cases, if not all cases, he says, people who go on to commit really significant violent crimes were deprived as children of normal opportunities to play in reciprocal ways. So they weren't allowed the kind of normal give and take play. They grew up in environments where play wasn't allowed, or their environments were dangerous or not acknowledging the needs of children, basically. And it's sort of like puppies. I understand that when you have puppies, when they do this rough and tumble play, they're learning how hard to bite and how to move their bodies. And they learn how to regulate their own biting and play instincts. And they learn the difference between play and fighting, or play and aggression. And there's a little bit of a parallel in humans when there's not early play, whether it's rough and tumble play or interpersonal play, people seem not to learn really basic and important aspects of how to interact with others and manage their own bodies in the world. This has come to be really poignant for me in my own clinical practice, and I work more with physicians and executives than serial killers, but one of the executives that I was talking with recently talked about his experience growing up in Latin America in a context where there was a lot of war and violence happening around him. And the quote from him that was so stuck with me is that he said, "I spent my childhood dodging bullets. I didn't spend my childhood playing." And for him now, that means that he really is struggling at this point to identify where his passion is. He is trying to make decisions for his business. And although he's perfectly capable of thinking through the pros and cons and the cognitive process, when I ask him just gut response, what do you want to do? What are you excited about? What do you love? Those emotions are way more difficult for him to access. And I think part of it is because he hasn't had practice in play in those really developmentally important years of his life.
I think this is a good reminder as parents that we should let our kids play. I think most people listening to this podcast probably do that and probably don't discourage that in general, but oftentimes my kids start getting loud with each other and they're not arguing and I'm telling them, hey, you know, quiet down. I even think just letting kids kind of play it out and being more open to maybe me relocating and letting them not feel guilty about playing and about learning those limits, I think can potentially impact their development and help them understand that it's okay. It's okay to play and get loud and learn the limits.
I think the implications, though, go way beyond parenting. I think the take home for me is that the opposite of play is not work. It's not work and play on the two ends of the spectrum. The opposite of play is depression, the absence of emotion, the absence of joy or pleasure. And I think for founders who are so immersed in their work, but there aren't elements of joy, there aren't elements of that feeling of, oh my goodness, this is a game and I'm going to rock this, then it may be sort of interesting to look back at your own developmental history and sort of think, like, what did I play well? Were there opportunities for me to really play and be frivolous and be joyful? Or if that was kind of missing from your developmental experience, then that's certainly one explanation for how, like, emotionally stuck you might feel at times. And if you're somebody who, whether or not that was missing from your early life, but right now you're in a place where you're feeling a lot of lack of joy or pleasure or fun, play may be something that you intentionally choose to figure out how to do as a way to help mediate some of the lack of joy that you're feeling.
Yeah, I like that you say that. The opposite of play is not work, it's depression. I mean, we looked at that in episode 4 of this podcast when you interviewed Greg Baguez about his experience dealing with that.
I want to interrupt really quick, sorry, because I want to make a little bit of a clarification between depression little d and major depression big D, you need to go see your doctor. Those are different things. I think a lot of us feel depression often at times throughout our lives. Major depression is a really significant illness, and it needs to be treated differently than go to the trampoline park. It needs to be treated often with your doctor. So just to interject that little piece there, and then sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Sure. So you're kind of saying depression can be feeling sad versus catastrophically impacting your life, right? And so this is perhaps more of the feeling sad type. If you don't play, then your brain's not going to integrate. You could potentially grow up with not being able to handle situations well. And then work might be a bummer and your personal life might be a bummer as well because you haven't learned to integrate all this stuff. I think the interesting idea that I want to latch onto is that work can be play. That play is not a dichotomy, right? That you mentioned that you're not necessarily playing 100% versus getting the job done 100%, and those are two different things. A task can be 50% play, 70% play, 75% play. It all depends on maybe how you frame it and the joy that you're getting out of it and the challenge that you're overcoming. And I could potentially see working on a team and being involved with other teammates and having that be part of the celebration and the camaraderie and the victory of it. It kind of comes back to the server issues that I'm dealing with right now. And it's like there's three of us that are working on it and everybody's writing code and deploying new servers and we're testing together. And there's this bit of a sense of a challenge. And while it is stressful, I definitely feel like we are going to win and overcome. And that's exciting. And that's kind of like going out and playing a football game or starting a track meet where you're nervous. You know it's going to hurt while you're doing it. You don't know that you're going to win, but you have a pretty good idea that you're equipped and set up to succeed. And so there's some excitement and some exhilaration to it. So does that make sense? Does that fit into this framework we're talking about of almost seeing work as play at times?
Absolutely. And again, I think when we look at our play experts, when you watch children, they're often quite intense about their play. Play is serious business for kids. They're creating their own rules. They're structuring the assumptions of the world that they're imagining. And they're instructing each other about how to follow the rules. I mean, it is maybe joyful in this like deeper down gut level, but there can also be quite a bit of intensity and earnestness to play.
I think that ties into this concept of flow as play. You've noted here in the outline that flow is this mental state of operation where a person is performing an activity and is fully immersed in it. So anyone who's ever written code, anyone who's ever sat down and started to work and then looked up and it was 5 hours later and they've forgotten to eat and they feel energized and focused and they're totally immersed in this activity, that's called flow. So You've mentioned that you can have Flow as Play, that Flow can do this integration. How does that work? Because it seems like Flow would be a hyper-focused thing. So I can't imagine how it would like integrate the brain like you've said Play does.
A lot of people have talked about Flow as hyper-focus, but it's not actually. Hyper-focus usually doesn't have the same level of joy and pleasure as Flow does. Hyper-focus can be when a person is sort of captured by a task. It's sort of an aspect of Flow, but it doesn't account for the whole experience of Flow.
Got it. Yeah, it sounds like hyper-focus may be more like obsession, almost like you're anxiously doing it, whereas Flow is like you're joyfully doing it, right? Like last time I went to the coast and I wrote like 3 or 4 blog posts that week. It was crazy. I mean, hours were slipping by and it was really, really fun. And I felt like super productive and I didn't feel like I had to write, right? I wasn't obsessing or like not being able to step away from my computer. It's that I really wanted to do what I was doing. And I had loud music playing and it was just a fun experience. I said, to me, that's like the prototypical, like the definition of Flow.
Yeah, you were just fully involved in it, but in an emotionally sort of content way, not an anxious, I can't stop, I'm worried about it way.
Right, that makes sense. Okay, so we've kind of defined this idea of play. We've mentioned why it's important to have it, the benefits that it gives us, and then how even during our work, we can experience this. Let's talk about a few other ways of how a founder can play. Maybe some specific ones at work and even some specific ones outside of work. Like what are examples? Because you mentioned like going to the trampoline park. I take our kids to this indoor trampoline place here in Fresno a couple times a month. And if I'm jumping on the trampolines and doing stuff with them, is that the kind of play we're talking about? Or is it something that's more tactile, like when we get a new Lego set and we put it together, or when we get the chessboard out or get some type of new game out that we're learning?
Well, there's all kinds of ways to engage play. The trampoline park is, first of all, it's hard not to be joyful while you're flying through the air, unless you're really afraid of your landing. But it's hard not to like sort of laugh and giggle when you're on a trampoline. So that's really big body play, gross motor play, where your whole body is involved. And that is a fantastic form of play, whether that's riding a bike or swimming or jumping off a rock into the lake. All of that kind of sense of freedom in your body is a great way to engage in this play process. The more fine motor, more strategic forms of play that you're talking about with Legos or chess or games, also awesome. Just a different set of brain processes are involved in that. That's more fine motor play. It's more strategy. You're using a lot of frontal lobe there, thinking about seeing the map of the board and different strategies for beating your opponent, or in this case, your 8-year-old. Anything that fosters laughter can be play.
I think a few others that we do fairly frequently is go to the beach and actually sit on the beach with the kids and build sandcastles and let them catch crabs and do all types of beachy things. Playing an instrument comes to mind. The other day I got my guitar out. I haven't played for a few months. And our 8-year-old was playing his cello and I just wrote down some chords and we played some songs together and he did backup, you know, on the cello, which was really cool. It's the first time we'd ever done that. We talked about this in the episode about raising entrepreneurial kids, but I love to play games and learn new games with them. And so I kickstart a bunch of games and we're always playing new things. And that's exciting. And that's, I think, part of what I get a lot of enjoyment out with the kids. I would count that as a lot of play. One of the other things that we've been enjoying recently is rewatching a good TV series. We're actually rewatching Friday Night Lights, right? So we watch an episode every few days. Does that count as play or is that a different thing? Is that kind of more mind-numbing because you're just consuming media?
I would include it. I think the best forms of play, neurologically speaking, do involve your body. So playing a video game or watching a movie, they're not as deep and rich forms of play as doing any of the other things that you've mentioned. When you think about that brain integration, anything where you're moving your body is better play, so to speak. But watching a good show at the end of the day, you're choosing it. It's more about process than outcome. It can be joyful. It can be kind of imaginative. You know, you're putting yourself in the position of the characters or you're engaging in that process in an imaginative way that sort of takes you out of real life. That is play-ish, but it's probably not as rich of play as something where your body is more involved.
So in terms of play that's outside of work, the goal that I kind of almost accidentally set up for myself was to make one memory every day with both of our kids, so that something that they could potentially remember when they get older. And for me, that has become the times that I play, that I engage with them and figure out something fun that we can do together, whether it's a chemistry experiment or breaking out old Magic the Gathering cards and playing a game or doing something like that. So that, I think, is my goal. Like, if you're listening to this wondering, what can I take away from this episode? I would say try to do something small at least once every day, some form of play, something that is outside of work and has all these characteristics that we've talked about. Even if you don't have kids, I think that's something you can totally pull off.
And that may be happening more than you realize. When I think about you, Rob, you have an element of play when you're experimenting with a new cocktail recipe. It's pleasurable for you. It's fun. You're sort of trying a new recipe. You're crushing those mint leaves with extra zest. You're doing it for pleasure. It's not totally outcome oriented. There's nothing really to be gained by putting that extra bit of sort of style into a new cocktail. It's really for fun. And I've seen you do that when you're cooking as well. It's something that is a grown-up responsibility, but there's absolutely an element of play because it's free, it's joyful, and you're using some imagination and creativity. So play is not all or nothing. You're not playing or not playing. So many of daily tasks you can do with sort of a spirit of play or elements of play.
Right. So it's kind of like get a hobby. I mean, that's some advice, right? It's like have a hobby, have something that you do outside of work. Even if you work hard, even if you work long hours, have that thing that you enjoy that you can get this value from. Because I agree with cooking. For me, it's just kind of a hobby. It's fun to do for the most part, as long as I'm not rushed. And I could see how someone without kids, that would be a really good way to do it. And it's probably something that I would do. And then let's flip the focus back to while you're at work. Like we talked about, you know, being in the flow state and getting things done and how a challenge can be almost gamified, a challenge of getting servers redone or you know, not letting your app go down. What are some other ways to make work tasks feel more like play, or a way to make work in general have more play in it?
I think play happens best when you're pretty engaged. So doing one task at a time, not trying to multitask, being as focused in the moment as you can be. I think also putting on some music, some funny music, some 80s dance tunes or rap of the 90s, something that is fun and a little bit more pleasurable can be a nice soundtrack and can add an element of play. And if you're having a really bad time and you're noticing how very, very serious you are, it may add an element of play just to force your face to smile. Because if you put your mouth and your face into that smile position, your body is instantly realizing that it's okay. The smile on your face alone triggers a little mini element of play within your body. And so maybe practicing smiling more, no matter what you're doing at work. Obviously, having a team where you can be sarcastic, tell jokes, kind of make fun of some of the things that are stressing you out, add some lightness and lightheartedness to the stressors is a form of play. Humor is certainly a play-based activity.
Yeah, all those have been big for me recently. I worked from home on my own for close to a decade, and then about a year and a half ago got an office and coworkers and such, and that has had a pretty big impact on my motivation on a day-to-day basis. I've just found that I'm more consistently motivated, and I don't struggle as much with kind of wandering off the reservation. I used to have some great weeks, and then I'd have entire weeks where I really didn't get much done, and that's much less these days because I have people around me and there's a lot of humor and just a lot of good, smart discussions and hard problems being tackled by smart people. And that totally invigorates me. And it's because I'm more of a goal-oriented person, as I'm sure most people listening to this podcast are, very kind of activated and elevated by challenges and enjoy taking them on. And I think that that's a big part of this is, you know, I didn't know the underlying theory of it, but it's that there's these kind of gamified challenges that we're attacking together. And I view it as like a dream team assembling to get stuff done.
And it doesn't hurt that you go to lunch every week and that there's beer tasting in your office.
Yeah, that's true. None of these things are bad things. I think the key takeaway, if you're listening to this wondering what should you do now that you've heard this episode, the first one I would try to do is do something every day outside of work that is some type of hobby or some type of play event, right? Something that you're going to remember. And if you have kids, try to do something with your kids that they can potentially remember into their adulthood. And then at work, take these ideas of doing one task at a time, staying in the moment, hopefully having some friends or some coworkers you can be around. And frankly, if you find yourself doing a bunch of work that you don't want to do and you're the founder, hire someone to do that.
I mean, play really does not have to be outside of work. You can work 80 hours a week, but if you're doing that playfully, you're still playing. Our clinic was having an onslaught of really difficult, challenging cases, and we were all feeling pretty tired and worried. And one of my coworkers was an actress 20 years ago in Los Angeles, and I got a hold of one of her headshots, and I made 50 copies, and I put it up all over the clinic, and I put it in the fridge, and I put it in the freezer, and I put it in everybody's mailbox, and it totally changed the feeling around our clinic. It just made everybody laugh. Everybody was signing fake autographs to themselves, and we just all needed a little lightness. It brought a little bit of play into the office, and it was really important. We needed that at that time, and it made work more fun. So get out there and play. We'll put some more play-based resources in the show notes for this week, including TED Talks from Stuart Brown at the National Institute of Play and the Flow guy, whose name I can't pronounce, and some other good resources for you to check out so that you can generate some of your own play ideas.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder.
We'll be back next week with another conversation about how to enjoy a little bit more Zen in your startup life.